by the way, I realized that we have never spoken about why the podcast is called Osmosis. So I think we should start
That's
with
good
that.
Realization.
Huh. There he is.
You're sorry, looking yeah, I really
handsome
you see me.
Today. You're looking very handsome.
Yeah, I could
today.
See me.
You've got no beard at all. You've got baby face.
Chop it off.
Looking very handsome.
It takes too much attention to, maintain it.
See, I feel like it takes too much attention. See, this is why you should do what I do. Just don't maintain it. Just be a mess.
Well, I don't maintain it. That's exactly what I do do.
That requires more maintenance. Because now you're going to get home and you'll feel like, oh.
No, I won't bother. That's fine.
It's just like,
once a season, shave it off.
Yeah, I get that.
And then it'll be back. Anyway, Osmosis.
Osmosis, indeed. So,
I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, and they asked why. So, from my perspective, well, definition of osmosis is the diffusion of fluid, often water, from a high concentration area of fluid to a low concentration area of fluid. So, how this typically manifests is like in a leaf. There's membranes, so you could think like different rooms.
So
and there's a dividing partition
using
the room.
At GCSE, we tend to talk about water potential other than concentration, because normally when we talk about concentration, we talk about salt concentration, like concentration of dissolved substances. So it can get very confusing when you then say water concentration, because obviously it goes in the opposite direction to a salt concentration. So water potential is just number of water particles, but you're right, it is concentration effectively of water particles. But the way I remember it is water moves towards the salt, which is a good way to think
about
it.
That's not how I remember it.
That's the easiest way. At GCSE, there'll be like a question in the exam. I put the potato in the high, very salty solution. What happens to the potato? Well, the water will move out of the potato because of the salt, right? Depends on the solution. That's how I remember it. What was I going to say?
Nice.
So I remember saying to you, let's start a podcast. I initially wanted to call it Dr. Jamie Explains, which I think is a bit of a lame title. But basically,
it's very pretentious.
I just wanted you to teach me stuff. Because I admire your brain a lot, and I always have admired your brain. So Osmosis, it felt like a nice name, didn't it? Because you're effectively diffusing knowledge into my mind across the partially permeable membrane of Discord.
Perfect.
There you go.
Yeah,
so that's why
we're
Osmosis.
Yeah,
you can find us on YouTube. You can find us on Spotify or wherever you get your normal podcasts.
We haven't introed. Who are you?
My name is Callum. Who are you?
I'm Jamie McMillan.
The Doctor.
Doctor. Doctor,
yeah, I'm just Mister.
It's not a real doctor.
I'm
a temperature doctor.
I'm technically allowed to put BSc after my name, but I only got a 2.2, so I feel like a bit.
You
of
don't
a fraud.
Have to put that on there, so it doesn't matter.
I feel like a bit
a BSc
of a fraud
is a BSc.
If I write it, you know.
It's fine. It doesn't matter.
What are we talking about today, baby-faced Jamie?
In the theme of why did we call it Osmosis? What I had in mind for this podcast was take a crazy looking paper.
Yeah.
And can we understand what it means? And so up to now, we've had with pizza. Who doesn't love pizza?
Yep.
We've had spacecraft. That was a unique one. We've had Fong. So Fong, like, I'm familiar with. That's like previous research. I've got an idea of that. Then we had plutonium. I mean, plutonium, that's just fun.
Yeah,
radioactive
yep.
stuff.
And
not
today.
And today, all right. So, name of the paper. So we have here, ADA IR, an adaptive all-in-one image restoration via frequency mining and modulation. That's inconspicuous. I don't know. That doesn't sound like a crazy title. It just says I'm going to restore images. And so this is by Yuning Tsui, maybe, perhaps. Butchered, perhaps, from the Technical University of Munich, et al. This is deep, man.
It's
this is
long.
Really far from my expertise.
It's very far from my
idea of
It's very far from mine as well. And it's, am I right? So the date this was released, recent.
Recent. 1 week ago.
Yeah, recent. So very recent. So this is cutting edge stuff. and so it's about it's affected. It's like machine learning, neural. Is it what they call it? Not neural pathway, neural network. That's the word. Neural networks, artificial intelligence, machine learning, that sort of thing.
All the keywords.
I use artificial intelligence a lot, to be fair, but like to create documents and things, you know. This is a whole new kettle of fish for me.
But it's the same kettle of fish.
Yeah. How do I mean? Do you use AI in your day to day? Do you use
day to day? Not frequently. Hang on. It depends. Because currently we're using AI right now on this call to blur. That's AI.
Yeah, I suppose you are. So correct.
Yep, kind of. Okay. But actively for like AI things. Not actively.
I subscribe to a wonderful website which is like teacher resources, but it uses AI. So it like, and it basically I can put in like a topic and a learning objective, and it will give me ideas or questions or prompts or
genius.
It's hugely time saving, and 9 times out of 10 they're very good. So I like to do a thing called a SLOP, which stands for shed loads of practice. So like at the end of a topic, I give the kids a SLOP, which is essentially a big essay of like direct instruction, just facts basically, and then questions that they can pull the answers from the text, and then like application questions and further research questions and explanation questions and things like that. Very, very, very useful for that. It saves me hours, AI. Hours.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it is great. It is great.
Nice. So this is a paper I pulled from the archive.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I might go on a wee tangent here on like the peer review process and what it means. So papers we've done, not all the papers, but typical, so like the scientific process, if someone says, oh, someone wrote a paper about a thing, mm-hmm. what they probably mean is there's a paper in a journal, which is just like a magazine, but it's not in a magazine anymore, that has gone through a peer review process. So by comparison, the paper that we're reviewing today is from the archive, and that is a preprint article. So this has not been peer-reviewed, but it's expected to be of an equivalent quality. So just the quickest tangents on what the peer-review process typically looks like. So I do some research, I write a paper,
mm-hmm.
and then I want to send that to a journal and get it published, so then I don't know. It's out there.
Other people
when
can
I've done...
critique it, right? And other people can make sure you're not chatting rubbish.
Exactly. But when I've for the papers that I've done, when I've done the work, I kind of that's me done. I'm like I want to share those results as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
And the peer review process can take an age. It
can take
like,
a long time.
Sometimes it's quick. Sometimes it can take an age. So a common practice would be my preprint article. I'm just going to share it. Just online. I could just host it wherever. So this archive is a common just dumping ground of, what are you up to?
Nice.
Tell me what you got. And often, so when I was submitting to a journal, I'd submit it to the archive as well. So there's the preprint article, so you can view that. It's free. And then the paper also goes through a peer review process. And
that costs money then, doesn't it? It can be monetized, right?
The monetization model is odd. Either you pay for it and then the readers don't have to pay for it, or you don't pay for it and then your readers pay for it. And of course most people go for the I don't pay for it, the readers pay for it, but then readers don't have to. It then becomes difficult to access.
Yeah, because I suppose money is finite.
Money needs to happen somewhere.
Yeah,
yep.
And I don't know of any people who are in professional situations like you are who have an infinite amount of money.
Nope.
So I imagine that it can be quite challenging sometimes to accrue funds for things like that.
I mean, you've already paid to do all of the work.
Yeah.
You want to pay even more?
Yeah.
Just Put it somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I find the archive awesome. If you check out my publications on the archive, I think there's four on there at the moment. One includes my thesis. Only two are published, but you can like them, follow the links back to the publication if you want to see like the change between the two. But from a content perspective, stuff in preprint doesn't really change to a published article. So there's some validity in it, but there's also grain of salt stuff. So yeah. Peer review process.
So if I don't get any of this, we can just say, obviously it needed to be peer reviewed. It didn't read very well.
Or this could be considered as part of the peer review process.
True. Except for the fact that we haven't got a clue what we're talking about. So are we really the peers to be reviewing it?
We're not.
And to be honest, normally when I'm sitting in a room with you and I say we, it's like, I really mean me. But like today, I actually mean we. I don't think you're an expert either, which makes me very happy. I don't feel so out of my comfort zone, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's I'm so excited to have a little look through. Adaptive all-in-one image restoration via frequency mining and modulation.
Sounds great.
Let's kick off.
So what do we have then? So broadly, this paper is talking about, I want to restore a rubbish-looking image to a good image.
Yeah. So they talk about noise. So what does noise mean, Jamie?
A noisy image
doesn't make sense. An image can't be noisy. Images are silent. Help me understand that. Sarcasm. Oh.
I'm prepped for like, give me the TLDRs for things, but I didn't prep one for noise. Noise is so often noise is it's a bit of a catch-all term for things where there's not enough signal, or there's just rubbish in your signal or observation. And so where this can often pop up is if you are taking a picture outside in daylight with your camera. It just looks crystal clear and looks perfect. And then you go inside, it's nighttime, you might have lights on, but you take a picture and then it just looks a bit grainy. And if you zoom in, rather than seeing like
fuzzy.
Each pixel being nice and clear, well, I wouldn't say... Yes, you could say fuzzy, but fuzzy might be more of a blur, which is another effect. So, it looks like if I zoomed into a small region, the pixel colours would be changing quite quickly, which doesn't make sense. Basically, they just change across the image, kind of randomly. It's just like random. It looks randomly crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Randomly crap. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. So noise is random crap. Blur is fuzz.
Yep.
Haze is...
I don't really know how to define haze.
I would define that as almost like a colour filter. That's how I imagine haze. Like, it's like a colour filter.
Yes. And I guess it would manifest itself in a real world situation if you're taking a picture of a city. And it's a bit foggy.
Yeah.
It's kind of hazy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's attenuation or like reduction of signal through the atmosphere you're observing.
Yeah.
To the target you want to look at.
And then rain. Can you tell me what rain is?
No, I've never heard of it. I was reading...
You're in England, mate. You should know.
I can't remember if it's from the book or from the film, but in June, there's the... They talk about rain, like, what?
Yeah.
Water just falls from the sky?
I'm actually reading the book at the moment, and there's a bit where he's talking about like how they don't have a word for swimming, which is really sad.
And there's another one, like drowning.
Yep.
You drowning.
Yeah. What book are you on? You're on the first one?
No, I finished the first trilogy. A couple of...
So, what, you've read June... What's the second one? It's Messiah, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is called... I haven't got there yet.
Children of.
Ah. I'm still on the first book. It's very good. I've only got like 3 hours left in my audiobook. I'm probably going to finish it after this podcast, to be honest. I've been a bit addicted. It's really fun.
It's really good. Did you watch the first film again?
I've watched the first
film. Going to see... Okay, great.
It makes so much more sense now!
Yes, I know. So you went to the cinema, you watched Dune 2, you had no a priori knowledge of the franchise.
I turned
How did you find that?
I turned to you literally not even 10 seconds after the lights turned back on in the cinema, and I went, probably should have watched the first film, and just burst out laughing because I did not have the foggiest clue what was going on. I did not have a clue. It was visually beautiful. To me, it was just
delightful.
It was a film that I think a lot of boys, you know, Paul is supposed to be, what, 15 in the movie. A lot of boys can probably understand. It's just a movie about a guy who can't stop thinking about Zendaya, which, you know, fair enough. That's what it was to me the first time I watched Dune.
That tracks back to the first film as well, actually.
It does. It's actually, I think it's worse in the first film because he's like dreaming about her before he's even seen her.
You don't even know her.
No.
Yep.
But no,
nice.
It was...
You enjoyed the first film.
It was very good. It was very good. I have enjoyed it a lot. What I really am enjoying about Dune is that it's a sci-fi book that feels like a fantasy.
Oh,
and I really like that. Because it's like a future where they've chosen, the human race have chosen not to go down the AI route.
Mm.
Do you know?
I think they did, and then they were like, oh, I don't like
exactly.
this.
Exactly. They learnt from their mistakes. And there's like weaponized religion in the Bene Gesserit church or whatever you want to call it. Oh, I just think it's really good. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yep, nice, good. Why did we get there? Water. What is rain?
Water, rain. It was a nice tangent. I've actually been really, really wanting to talk to you about Dune, so I'm glad that we have got that out of our systems briefly.
So we've got these five like effects that degrade an image. So we've got low light, so if you're taking a picture in the dark.
Oh, hello,
Josie. Haze. Oh, hello. Haze, so if you're looking through an atmosphere, like a cloudy day or a foggy day.
Yep.
Rain, blur if your camera's wiggling about a bunch, and then noise, just random.
So
there are your five degradation effects that this model is looking to restore.
Nice.
And like reading I can't remember how far I got through the paper, but I was thinking, why? Which is always a good question to ask.
So
who cares about this?
So I watched some YouTube videos around the subject, and some of the YouTube videos I was watching was blokes working in like microscopy, so viewing things like cells under a microscope, 3D modeling mitosis and things like that. And he wasn't really talking about so much as the why. He was more talking about the how. But my kind of understanding was, you know, especially in those very precise and accurate spaces of like looking at very small things, I imagine if there is a little bit of noise, that could cause quite a lot of trouble. And then I think back to my days when I used to run I used to do a lot of gas spectrometry out of university. Ooh. And we, you know, that would need to be regularly calibrated. Otherwise, the noise in the signal would just be too much to bear, basically, and we wouldn't be able to get any meaningful readings from it. So my thoughts on the why is because a little could become a lot, I guess, if you was to zoom in.
Yeah, that's probably reasonable. And so the paper does highlight like a couple of fields that it's used in. So one of those is medical imaging. So that tracks. So a contrast here with, I feel like I'm from a cult, but my beliefs of metrology. So my background is in measurement science, and where you're describing the calibration of your gas spectrometer, I want to have complete confidence that the numbers coming from that are legit.
Are true, yeah.
And in my gut, like these image restoration techniques, not just image restoration, but just machine learning techniques in general, they're just fiddling the numbers. They make a pretty picture, but they're changing things. And that gives me heebie-jeebies.
But then I suppose machines will be smarter than people in a few years, if not already. Maybe they know what's there. Maybe their educated guess is better than a better photograph.
Yes, So it's good that they're smart, but what if they change the number now that it doesn't mean anything and now I have no traceability? Then we're getting into the field of too much. But it gives
you should
me
read
but...
on the subject of books, you should read a book. What's it titled? Let me I can't think who writes it. I've probably told you about it before. It's called Scary Smart by a dude called Mo Gordat. He was I think he was a Google X researcher, so like the AI strand of Google.
That guy, yeah, yeah.
Must read that book. It makes me terrified.
I'm sure they're keen on AI. Yeah, Mo Gordat.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I recommend
anyway,
that
one. So, despite that, I do recognise that it has uses, it has applications in particular fields. So in this instance where we're thinking about like medical imaging, yes, you really care about the truth of that image. Like if it says there's a tumor, I want to know that there is a tumor.
And I want to know where it is. I don't want it to flag up falsely somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to misdiagnose someone having something that they don't. Mm. So there's an importance there on truth. But where it does become useful is if you have
I tell you when it becomes useful. when you book an expensive wedding photographer and it rains, that's when it's useful. That's when most people will find use out of this, when the layman would find use out of this.
So there are uses. There are definitely uses. And so some of the other things we've got are, I think it was surveillance. Like there, the metrologist just keeps creeping back. But like in principle, you don't care what's really there, you just want the best quality. So like there I see it, and remote sensing, which is the field I'm currently working in, even there the metrologist keeps coming back. I don't know, so I'm a skeptic, but you know, that's
I mean I that's I don't know. I just think it's, you know, I think this is the way that the world is going. You can be as skeptical
Absolutely.
As you want, but I don't think
it doesn't matter.
It's gonna stop you using it, you know.
Yep. Yeah, so there are uses. There are still uses for it. And so broadly speaking, so this paper is it's proposing a method to do this image restoration to account for these Ghibli effects, and they are going to benchmark it against existing methods. And so there is some of the existing work in the field is the single task restoration models. So I am a model that is solely focused on de-raining images, and you tell it, here's a rainy image, get rid of the rain, and it will do a thing. And so there are these single task methods, but then there's also similar to this all-in-one methods that try and fix everything. So that's the general gist of the paper. Here's our thing, here's how good it is to existing things.
So do we want to have a look at some of the images? And we can sort of
talk
about what we can
see. What you got?
Well, I'm just looking through. So I'm going. So Fig 2, I thought was quite interesting. So it looks,
can we go to Fig 1 first?
We can go to
Fig 1's really good.
Fig 1 is really good. So Fig 1 is, I don't really understand the graph, but I can see the changes in the pictures. So you can explain the graph to me.
I don't want to explain the graph. I read it and it kind of makes sense, but it doesn't all make sense. So they make a good point in the caption. So if we're going to look at this, then an important aspect of this paper is the domain they're working in.
Which is?
So, I don't know if it's all, but the author proposes that a lot of existing all-in-one, well, a lot of existing models, they consider the spatial domain. So they look at that picture, and from that, they build up their network of improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think is a great idea, the author is proposing here is we can look in that spatial domain. That's really sensible. But we can also look in the frequency domain. And
when we're talking about frequency here, we're talking about frequency of light, I suppose, like in the image. Help me understand.
Yeah, this is a weird thing. So, what did I have? Did I have a good method for describing this? I don't know. So we can look at an image and we can see properties on it. So we could imagine a blank image, so it's all black, and we scatter lots of white dots all over it, randomly across that scene. So we've got
white noise.
Almost what looks like, yeah. So let's say we've got noise. So we could think of this as just like a CRT TV back in the day when it's looking at nothing. So there's just a scattering, random scattering of stuff on the screen.
I used to think that looked like birds. I used to think it looked like little birds flying towards me. That's what I pictured when I looked at white noise on a CRT
TV. I don't know if I ever ascribed it to anything.
No, I was just thinking it was birds.
And now it's not a thing anymore because we don't use...
I know, it's such a shame.
Don't use it.
I do think it's a shame that like kids these days will never know the little static the little static click of touching the front of the telly screen.
It never goes away. Kids these days will never know X.
When I was a kid I thought I'd never say that. I really thought I'd never say that. But I say it every day.
The nostalgia trip is a trip, man.
Yeah, it really is. I wonder what kids will be nostalgic about, like kids right now.
That's a good point.
It's going to be TikTok. Yeah. Oh, God, do you remember how good TikToks used to be?
Yeah. That's an interesting... Yeah, I wonder what they would think about. So if we have this CRT image or this like noisy image, if we look at... it's tricky to do this without just saying, imagine a plot where X is this and Y is this. If we look at that image, the features are changing very rapidly across that image. So like it's going from white to black, lots of times in that image.
Yeah.
If instead we turned on the TV and there was just a big white circle in the middle of a black screen, what you would see is a very slow change, or not a very gradual change across that entire image. So rather than having lots of changes, a high frequency component,
right?
We've got a low frequency component because it's just changing once across that image, or it's just changing a little bit across that image. So that's kind of how you could visualize the frequency domain in an image.
Wow.
I still have to think hard when... So this is a common thing in my day to day, but
so it's not so much. It's not about the frequency of light, but it's like the frequency of change in the image that you're looking at.
The frequency of like structure or features within that image.
So if you go on.
Well, I was just going to point to figure one. So apologies, audio listeners, but here we have
it's on YouTube, guys. If you want to see it, it will be up on YouTube. If you want to have a look at the pictures as well, at Osmosis.
Or just find the paper. You can find the paper in the link.
Also true.
Yeah.
Figure one.
That holds. So if we're looking at figure one, then we can see a picture of a plane, and it's like it's really zoomed in, and it's a bit grainy. And so what we can see here is that's a noisy image, and there's lots of high frequency components, or it's changing a lot across that image. And so when we look at the little chart on the right, what that's saying is, the subgraph illustrates the mean values of the Fourier spectra. Oh my God. what I see from that is if we look at all of the different frequency features in that image, it doesn't change a lot. That purple line looks flat. Whereas if we look at some of the other lines, so we've got dehazing, it suggests that it peaks up at low frequencies. So that's saying that there's a really strong low frequency characteristic with this image. So that's kind of what's going on there. But that's, I think that's an important concept behind this work, is thinking about these artifacts in the frequency domain. Because you can say this image looks noisy from a spatial perspective. Like, I look at the picture and you're like, ooh. But if you look at it in the frequency domain, you're like, well, that's just clearly lots of high frequency noise, and I can address that. I know I can. Yeah. I can understand.
I'm saying but I'm going to be honest. I don't really get it.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think that's a very good explanation, but I mean, so this is true.
Is it?
I watched the YouTube videos. I watched the one guy said, "If you don't get this, you're not dumb. It's just really high level stuff." And I was like, "That makes me feel so much better." So I don't feel bad.
I suck at machine learning, artificial intelligence. I've been around it for
I've used like I said,
10 years, bit, more than but... 10 years. Still mystery garbage to me. Really awesome, but mystery garbage.
Yeah, gonna change the world, but yeah. Shall we look at Fig 2?
Well, yes, yeah. Let's do that. What is Fig 2 saying? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see.
So my understand again. A lot of this paper really was a bit tricky for me. My understanding is that these images are showing that this particular adder IR is able to differentiate very clearly between the different things, between the different types of what's the word? I want to use the word noise, but noise is a specific one. You know what I mean?
Degradation artifacts.
Degradation
Let's go with that.
Artifacts. It can distinguish well between the different degradation artifacts present in an image.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's benchmarking against Prompt IR and AirNet, and what it's suggesting is so these are the TSNE results. Okay, don't know what that means, but the what it's indicating is these other models there's a bit of overlap and it's a bit fuzzy whether or not it's trying to fix a noisy image or a rainy image. So yeah, that's what it's suggesting there. I was interested in your thoughts on a neural network. So you picked up a couple of videos. Can you describe to me what is a neural network, Callum?
I can try as long as you correct me.
Yeah, all right.
So when I think about what a neural network is, I think of... No, I can't. I can't. I'm not confident enough. I don't think I know it. I think you need to tell me.
Yeah, all right. So I don't know. I think I know. And I was trying to boil down to just the simplest description of this. And so I would describe a neural network as a brain. And we can just leave it
Now I'm annoyed because I was going to say that, but I didn't write it down on a piece of paper. I felt like that was a cop-out.
No, I mean, yeah, it's a cop-out. I'm going to say more words, but it's a brain.
My understanding is it's like a computer or a computer program that behaves in a similar way to how the brain behaves, in that it communicates between nodes and... Yeah, that's about it.
So, I guess, thinking about what our brain does, like from my lay perspective, I don't brain things, is there's just lots of connections in your brain, mm-hmm. nodes, and your brain's just really good at connecting those nodes.
Yeah, and when you learn new things or think new things, new connections are made.
Yeah. That's brain. And specifically for a neural network, they're often trained. So you train that brain for a specific task.
I actually almost just died because you made me laugh. I'm sorry. That's brain.
That's brain.
They're
really good at recognizing relationship between features or nodes. And the typical way that you would train a neural network is you'd just throw a shed load of data at it and you'd say, here, this is what a dog looks like. This is what a cat looks like. And then it's like,
eventually it's not.
You
could
draw a picture of a bird and it's like, I don't think
it's not a
anything.
Dog. That's not a, not dog. A dog. I can tell you that for nothing.
Now, if you want to know the meaning of life, I've got nothing for you. But
yet,
a dog.
Yet. I'm sure there's a neural network out there working on the meaning of life.
Well, so if you're on the topic of, like, AI taking over, we have really narrow-focused AI, which this kind of is. Like, it's just, this task is image restoration. It's not, that's what it does.
Yeah.
And then you've got the really broad ones. So narrow ones, really good. They're going to take over the world. But the big ones, they're not that good.
I think we should put that on a t-shirt. Broad AI.
Tiny big.
Not that good. Jamie McMillan 2024. And then we need to look at that t-shirt in 10 years.
Merch flag. Yep, let's do that.
Merch. If you're looking to buy Osmosis merch, it doesn't exist.
Is anybody asking for it?
Nope. No one's asking for it.
So that's what a neural network is, and that's the concept of this model that is being built by the authors. And the two like chunky beefy parts of this model is, or the framework, there's a frequency mining module, mm-hmm. and then there's a frequency modulation module. And so where we were discussing like the pull out frequency things, is it high frequency or is it low frequency? That comes out from the mining module, and then the modulation module, I don't really know what that does. It just talks between them and
changes something, I imagine. Stuff.
Modulates.
Just guessing. Yeah. Just a little guesstimation.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So
interesting. We're experts. Moving swiftly on. I think we should skip Fig 3, because I took one look at this and swiped to the next page.
Figure 3 was intense. I also did. And then I thought, well, hang on, no. Let's try and understand it. But then I also went to the next page.
Yep, I haven't got a clue what I'm seeing, to be honest with you.
Things that we see here, in principle, this is just showing a bunch of mathematical operations that they're applying to the images. And they've broken it down into a few little chunks. So yep. Here we can see like a really high level like flow of the image restoration framework, taking a degraded image and restoring it. So that's broadly what we see here. And then there's a couple of like breakdown chunks of what yep. the frequency modulation module is, what the frequency mining, frequency modulation.
Absolutely.
And then the CA. What was the CA? The cross attention. All right. And
yeah, the cross attention. Yep.
The LH and then the HR. Okay. So yeah, there's a couple of big chunks here.
Yep.
And these are just showing tasks. And the things that we see here are convolutions. Mm. We see Fourier transforms. And yeah, some other bits and bobs. Yeah.
Some other bits and bobs.
If you read the text, like the overall pipeline method, the words make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, sure, the word the makes lots of sense in isolation.
let's excerpt here. The overall goal of our framework is to learn a unified model, M, that can recover a clean image, I, prime, from a given degraded image, I, without any prior information of degradation type, D, present in the input image, I. That's just good language. That makes a lot of sense.
I read that. Where did you read that from?
That's,
Is that
section 3, method, overall pipeline.
Oh, yeah. I'm here. Yeah,
it's both above and below.
Yeah.
Like, you take that, yeah, like, kind of makes sense. So, good words.
Yeah, wonderful words.
I don't know, if we were to take it from like a peer review perspective, I got no beef with this part.
To be fair, if I'm coming at this from peer review, I think they've done a wonderful job. I mean, personally, I can't see any mistakes in their process. I can't see any.
Nope. Seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. Again, not an expert. It seems reasonable.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a very important point, Mr. McMillan. Sorry, doctor.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so some of the fun technical things here were like Fourier transform stuff and convolution. I don't want to talk about convolution.
Can you tell me what Fourier transform is? Because I don't know what that means.
But Fourier transform, I do want to talk about that because it's really cool.
I don't know what it is. Fourier, tell me about it.
All right. So when I think about Fourier, I instinctively think of like a signal from, I don't know, some measurement thing. And it's showing wiggly lines. And they're just arbitrarily wiggling. But what you can do is you can apply a Fourier transform and have a look at the frequencies within that. And so that means nothing. But if we step back a little bit, further. If I was to take a an arbitrary line, so I'm thinking like a function, like a y equals an fx line. So we can imagine this is just a line wiggling about. It isn't something that I can just model with like a typical mathematical operation, like a sine function or a exponential function. It's just wiggling over the place. But if I was to take a sine wave, so a sine wave is, if I think of just an oscillation, so maybe like a pendulum swinging will oscillate in a sinusoidal behavior. So it just oscillates between two points. I could think of a guitar string oscillating up and down when it's been plucked. And so if I take a sine wave, which is just an up and downy thing of the right shape, so the right amplitude and the right frequency, I can just replace that. I can superimpose that over my random function. And it won't look a lot like it at all. Or it's unlikely to look a lot like it at all. And now if I take another sine wave with a slightly different shape and I add it in and superimpose it, I can eventually add enough sine waves that I can approximate my random function. So I've got a wiggly line and I can describe it with an assorted mush of sine waves.
Known lines. Mush of known functions, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And so if I do that, what you can identify is, are there particular frequencies of these sine waves that I'm applying? And you can then, identify what are the most important frequencies. And that frequency analysis is common in a bunch of things. It's common in like acoustic engineering, electrical engineering. Yep.
I think, because I've heard the word before, like Fourier transformations. And now that you've explained it, I have heard and seen this done, specifically thinking about like sound engineering and acoustical engineering, that sort of thing. I've watched many YouTube videos about guitars. And music.
So Fourier transform is that. So it's often used to take from one domain, so maybe like a spatial domain of my image, or like a one domain or a time domain, and you take a Fourier transform and it takes it into the frequency domain. So that's often how it's used in practice. And what we see here is a fast Fourier transform. That's just a like software engineering hack to make things quicker and more efficient.
Nice.
In principle, it's the same methods. So you go from in this case, the spatial domain of the image, I can look at it and see features, to what's the frequency domain. So where we were talking earlier about pulling out high-frequency noise artifacts to low-frequency single blob in the middle. If I had those two images smushed together, so I had a really noisy image, and then really I superimposed that blob in the middle, so it's still a noisy blob, I would see two clear peaks in the frequency domain. I would see the clear high frequency component from the noise and a clear low frequency component from the
blob. Okay.
And so that's kind of what's going on here. And that's,
I feel bad for our listeners in this one.
My hand wiggling?
It's just very hard to, I don't feel that the hand wiggling doesn't affect the listeners, Jay. It's quite hard to visualize, but I'm just going to keep remembering what the guy in the YouTube video said. You're not dumb if you don't understand this. It's just high level stuff.
It's pretty high level stuff. So what are we doing here? They are so doing some Fourier transforms. So frequency mining, pull out all of the important frequencies, frequency modulation, do some stuff, but pull out all of those frequencies. Pull out all of those frequencies, smush some things together, and from that I can identify what are the degradation artifacts in my image, and I know the correction I need to apply to each of them because I've identified it's a noise type thing or a rain type thing.
Yep.
And then it magically restores it. So
magically. It's not science, it's magic.
So that's broadly the method of the paper.
Yes.
And the framework.
Please tell me we're skipping the tables, the pages of... Okay, no, we've got pictures first. Fig 4. So the four is the has got degraded image, images being input, and then it's got the different what does it say? Comparisons between all-in-one methods. So the comparisons between all-in-one methods, so you can see some of the differences.
I don't know what to say about this other than you can see, oh look, ours is the best.
I mean, yeah,
Pretty much.
it does what it says on the tin. They should rename it to Ron Seal. Because I think Adder IR is pretty long. Just call it Ron Seal Restoration. Does what it says.
If
It
I'm
just.
typing in the command line, Callum, Ada IR is a lot shorter than Ron Seal with a space in it as
Yeah, but
well.
if
Come on, man.
imagine if you want to sell this. It's got a
Yeah, all
bet.
right.
Ron Seal's got a better ring. And everyone knows the tagline does what it says on a tin.
I did. Until you said it, I had forgotten
But to
it.
be fair, until it popped up in my head, I'd forgotten it.
But
That's buried.
yeah. So yes, Figure four is visual comparisons between the Ada IR and the AirNet and Prompt IR models. So yeah, they look different. They look,
We
yeah,
can
they look
assure
like they
you,
look.
audio listeners, that they definitely look different. And Ada IR looks probably a bit different than the other ones.
it does. So we did skip a table, and
Yeah,
I mean,
intentionally. You're gonna make me scroll back up?
I mean, really, we can look at the colors here, Callum. So what we see here
Right, hang on. I'm
is,
scrolling up.
all right, table one. So what we see here is Ada IR. Their numbers are in red. That's the best.
Right.
And all of the other numbers are in black or blue, which is not the best. So that's what we can see here.
Excellent. Moving swiftly on.
Excellent. So
Again,
what the
audio listeners,
so
I can confirm that they were in red. Are we floundering yet? Is this
absolutely. Well,
the
absolutely.
worst one yet? Should we stick to pizza?
Well,
I'm having a
I
great
did it.
time.
I'm enjoying myself. So the method or the hypothesis is we can do a restoration method and it's better than all the others. From an experimental perspective, how do you verify that? They benchmarked it. So that's all these tables are showing is just them benchmarking to other models. And so if you want to benchmark something, you need to have a metric, and their metrics are peak
Whatever's in the
signal to
table.
noise ratio and structural similarity indices. So if we look at these tables, we see a bunch of like number slash number, and that's what we're seeing here. So we're just seeing how did what is a number that says how good we did.
Right.
Yeah, so
Again,
they say
really good
ours
work
is
for
the
the peer
best.
review.
I what it, like it, coming at it from a peer review perspective, I look at it and I think, I mean, that's it kind of looks perfect. Their number is the best. They've looked at a bunch of different degradation artifacts. That's great. I got no grief with that. Without like the context of, well, obviously you chose those models to benchmark against because everyone knows they're rubbish. Like
Oh, yeah, that's
that's
such
what
a
I don't know.
cynical viewpoint, Jamie. Oh, gosh. So, after Fig 4, I'm skipping the table. You're
Please,
insistent on
please.
going back, but I'm moving on, mate.
You're welcome. You're
We've
welcome.
got the same image as in Fig 4. So Fig 5 is the same but deraining results. And again, I can confirm to the audio listeners that Ada IR's looks like it doesn't have any rain in
That's quite
the
right.
derained
Yes.
pictures. And then
Rain
again,
disappears.
Fig 6, it's denoising. So what was our definition of noise, Jamie? Remind me.
Random crap.
Random crap. So you can see lots of random crap. I really do like the Nemo fish in this one. So there's a
Yep.
Nemo fish. And again, does what it
Random crap is
says.
Gron.
Does what it says on the
Gron.
tin.
Wow. Yeah, it's denoised those images.
And
So
then
that's great.
again, there's many more numbers. Many more numbers. I think
More
we can skip
numbers.
numbers. Let's talk conclusion, maybe.
Yeah, well, so what we're seeing here is just a breakdown of
Yeah. It's
doing benchmarks
numbers.
against
Yeah.
single task models and all-in-one models. I think the only one to point out was table five, where
Table 5.
they do make it clear to the reader when they're not the best. So if we look at table five, we can have a look at the bottom row, which says this is our ADAR-IR model in these five degradation artifacts. So dehazing, raining, noising, blurring, blow lights. And here's how we perform against all of these other models on average.
Interesting to me that they put the one where they're not the best on table five and not table one, because they knew that no one was going to look at all of the tables.
That's just good report writing. I wouldn't say I've not done the same.
Like, very smart.
I'm going to highlight the results that I think are the best, but I've got to be honest with you.
I will.
There are some things that it's not perfect at.
But so hey, that's, nothing's that's perfect, good. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we see a collection of tables, and so the only point where they weren't the best was denoising. They got outed by Restormer. And I guess a point here is this Restormer is a single task model. So
you might expect it to do better at the one thing it's designed to do, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, actually, hang on, it's not the best. No, the IDR does the best. Apologies. IDR does better, and that's an all-in-one. Anyway, it's interesting. It seems like these all-in-one frameworks are kind of the bananas.
The bananas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're
So the bananas is like a term of endearment, is it?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? I've never heard that before. I've never heard you say that.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
We should make it a thing. That's a segment. What's the bananas this week?
And then we follow up with some ablation studies, and yeah, I went over this.
Why did they do this? I have scrolled to conclusion.
I don't know why they did this.
I have scrolled.
Yeah. But I do appreciate their conclusion is a tidy little
page. It was probably the easiest thing to read in the whole paper.
Like I say, you want to read a paper, you read the abstract, you read the conclusion, then that's it.
Do you know what? That advice that you've given me has never been more important than in this one. Because that's how I tackled it, basically.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, conclusion here. So we're saying, so the conclusions that the authors were stating is that ADAR-IR is the bomb. It's better than, it obtains a 0.63 decibels peak signal to noise ratio improvement over the prompt IR. So it's better there. It was absolutely awesome at deraining, and still pretty good at the dehazing compared to previous models. And it makes bad images look pretty.
Their closing statement kind of is beautiful. It just says, the proposed network achieves state-of-the-art performance on a range of image restoration tasks.
I mean, you can't fault that.
Succinct.
It's amazing.
Yep. There you go. Paper complete.
And ADAR-IR.
ADAR-IR, as described by two idiots who don't know anything about image restoration. But I had a blast because I have learned a little bit today. You explained Fourier conversions.
Fourier's good. Yeah.
And
what else do we pick up on?
The frequency stuff that was interesting. I've never sort of had that explained to me before. It was. Yeah,
it's a weird thing to think about, but yes.
But yeah, so
yeah, I enjoyed myself. What were your takeaways, Callum?
So, this, I don't plan what my takeaways are. By the way, they come.
Oh,
to
neither
me,
do I.
They come to me while we're talking, and I think I've really enjoyed that we are looking at a very state of the art and recent paper, because we've done some history lessons the last couple of episodes, and. Like I've said to you, my experience in sort of using AI and machine learning has very much been sort of text-based and prompt-based, you know. So this was an interesting look into a world that I really don't know very much about. And if I'm going to give you a takeaway, it's that an awful lot of work goes into things that for a lot of people don't matter. That's my takeaway. This is a lot of work.
Yep. It is a lot of
it's
work.
It's going to make some
And that's kind of the definition of all sciences.
I don't know. I feel like like medical research, and I mean, I suppose this could be considered medical research. Maybe somewhere out there, there's someone that's going to be saved by noise reduction on their CT scan or something. And I hope that that's the case.
That'd be nice.
I don't know. When I think about stuff like this, it feels so insignificant because it's so, even though it's obviously not specific, it's all in one. It's still very specific, you know.
It's got applications in remote sensing, medical stuff, surveillance.
Yeah.
It's a lot of applications.
But those applications are things that most people don't consider, right?
Mm.
I don't know. It's just, it's that's my takeaway. It's a bit of, I feel a bit mean saying it, to be honest. Imagine these guys get a little email. God, you never guess what. It's been mentioned in a podcast talk about it. They listen to it and it's just me, some pleb from England going, God, they really care about something that doesn't matter that much. What's your takeaways, Mr. Jamie?
Just from a technical perspective, I like the... I'm pretty sure I said this about the last paper. I like their experimental setup. They're good good methodology. Ballsy statement. Ours is the best. But the evidence proposed looks decent.
Prove them wrong.
I can't. From my perspective, I can't prove them wrong. It looks great. Publish it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's easy good. Peasy. So,
Kudos.
That was ADA IR, adaptive all-in-one image restoration via frequency mining and modulation, as peer-reviewed by Dr. Jamie McMillan, PhD, right? And Mr. Callum Morris, BSc 22.
That's great. thanks a lot, everybody, for listening. This has been great. Where can you find us?
You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. Specifically, I always think of Spotify as OsmosisCast and YouTube.com @OsmosisCast as well. And we look forward to hearing you. Make sure you do a subscribe, leave a comment, let us know if you'd like to look at a paper, drop us an email, whatever you like. Thank you very much for listening.
Take it easy.
Thank you. Bye.